Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Du willst beides. Aktives Fondsmanagement und die Vorteile eines ETFs? Xtrackers aktive ETFs liefern genau das, die Verbindung von smartem Portfolio-Management mit effizienter ETF-Struktur, kosteneffizient und mit dem Potenzial für Überrenditen. Aktive Strategie trifft auf ETF-Effizienz. Informiere dich jetzt auf xtrackers.de. Zusammenwachsen. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Werbemitteilung herausgegeben von der DWS International GmbH mit Sitz in Frankfurt.
Welcome once again to the Richard Serrett Show. Hey, don't forget to leave a 5-star review and a comment. It helps spread the word. On this edition, I'm diving into the political earthquake shaking America, Elon Musk's America Party. Is it a bold revolution to smash the two-party stranglehold, or a reckless gamble that could hand the radicals a win? Musk's calling out the Uniparty's $5 trillion debt bomb. Will his crusade spark freedom or chaos? Plus, another explosive news not in the news, exposing the Epstein cover-up, a transgender medical scandal on kids, CBC's betrayal of truth, and a pediatrician's vile rant cheering flood deaths. The elites don't want you to know these stories, but we're ripping the curtain off. Tune in. Truth doesn't hide forever. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Monday, July the 7th in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Stop repeating, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
Elon Musk has just lit a match under the powder keg of American politics, and the explosion could either ignite a revolution or burn the house down. On Saturday, the billionaire visionary, rocket man, car guy, and now political firebrand, took to his digital fiefdom, X, and announced the launch of the America Party, a third-party crusade to restore freedom to a nation he says is choking on the collusion of a uniparty system. This isn't just a tweet storm, it's a declaration of war on the Republican and Democratic machines, a middle finger to the two-party duopoly that's been running the show since the ink dried on the Constitution. But let's not kid ourselves. This is a high-stakes gamble, and history isn't kind to dreamers who try to rewrite the rules of the American political game. Musk's America Party is either the spark of a new era or a fool's errand that could fracture the right and hand the keys to the radicals. So let's set the stage. Elon Musk isn't some ivory tower theorist tossing ideas into the wind. This is a guy who pumped $250 million into Donald Trump's 2024 campaign, the man who stood in the MAGA trenches slashing government fat as the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, for those who love a good meme. He was Trump's right-hand man, a billionaire ally in the fight against the swamp. But then came Trump's big, beautiful bill, signed into law last Friday, a sprawling package of tax cuts and spending that Musk branded a disgusting abomination. On X, he didn't hold back. The Republican Party has a clean sweep of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches, and still had the nerve to massively increase the national debt by a record $5 trillion. $5 trillion. That's not a budget. That's a ransom note to future generations. Musk's response? He's done playing nice. He's launching the America Party to give voice to the disaffected, fiscal conservatives, libertarians, anyone who's sick of Washington's spendthrift ways. Donald Trump, predictably, is apoplectic. Speaking to reporters in New Jersey on Sunday, the president didn't mince words. It's ridiculous to start a third party. We have tremendous success with the Republican Party. The Democrats have lost their way, but it's always been a two-party system. He doubled down on Truth Social, lamenting that Musk has gone completely off the rails, a train wreck, spiraling out of control. Trump's argument is simple. Third parties are a pipe dream. They've never worked in America, and they never will. The system, he says, is built for two parties, and anything else just breeds disruption and chaos. He's got a point. The history books are littered with the corpses of third-party movements. The Bull Moose Party, the Populists, Ross Perot's Reform Party. They flare up, make some noise, and then fade into oblivion. The last time a third party really mattered was 1912, when Teddy Roosevelt's Progressive Party split the Republican vote and handed the White House to Woodrow Wilson. That's not exactly a success story. But Musk isn't one for history lessons. He's a man who builds rockets to Mars and cars that drive themselves. He doesn't just think outside the box, he blows the box up. His America Party is aimed at the growing chorus of Americans who feel betrayed by both sides. On Friday, he ran a poll on X asking if people want independence from the two-party system. The results? Nearly two-thirds said yes. That's not just a vibe, it's a seismic shift. People are fed up with choosing between a Republican Party that talks fiscal restraint but spends like a drunken sailor and a Democratic Party that's gone full tilt into woke insanity. Musk's tapping into that anger, promising a party that stands for freedom. Freedom from bloated government, crushing debt, and elites who think they own you. On X, he put it starkly. When it comes to bankrupting our country with waste and graft, we live in a one-party system, not a democracy. That's the kind of line that gets people nodding, even if they're not sure what comes next. The naysayers are already circling. CNN's Scott Jennings, a conservative with a knack for cutting through the noise, warned Musk on Sunday that his America Party could split the right and hand elections to the Democrats. You may be dividing the forces of people who want to save Western civilization, Jennings said, to the benefit of the people who don't. That's a dagger to the heart. Picture this. Musk's crusade pulls votes from the GOP, and suddenly the radical left, those champions of open borders, identity politics, and fiscal lunacy, are back in the driver's seat. It's not a hypothetical, it's a real risk. Political historian Michael Kazin put it even more vividly. Third parties are like honeybees. They sting, and then they die. It's a brutal metaphor, but it fits. The Green Party, the Libertarians, the Reform Party, they all had their moment, but none broke the two-party stranglehold. The system is a fortress with ballot access laws, winner-takes-all elections, and media bias guarding the gates. And then there's the personal cost to Elon Musk. This isn't just a political fight, it's a business risk. His companies, Tesla, SpaceX, you name it, rely on billions in government contracts. His feud with Trump could slam the door on those deals, and Tesla's stock is already taking a beating. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who clashed with Musk at Doge, couldn't resist a jab on CNN. He said, "I imagine those board of directors didn't like this announcement yesterday and will be encouraging him to focus on his business activities, not his political activities." Translation, stick to cars and rockets, Elon. But Musk's not the type to listen to suits. He's a visionary, a disruptor, a man who thrives on defying the odds. Back in May, he said he'd spend a lot less on politics after his White House stint. Clearly, he's changed his tune. So what's the America Party really all about? It's a rebellion against a system Musk sees as rotten to the core. He's targeting fiscal conservatives who cringe at trillion-dollar deficits, libertarians who want government out of their lives, and anyone who's tired of the same old political kabuki. He's not just talking reform, he's talking revolution. On Sunday, he was back on X crowdsourcing ideas for the party and hinting at a big push for the 2026 midterms. He's even threatened to bankroll campaigns against every congressman who voted for Trump's bill. That's not a plan. That's a vendetta. But here's the catch. Turning tweets into votes is harder than it looks. The Federal Election Commission database is already cluttered with fake America Party filings. That's the kind of chaos Musk is wading into. And it's only the beginning. Now, I'll be honest, I'm torn. Part of me wants to stand up and cheer. Musk's got the guts to say what millions are thinking. The system's broken, and the two parties are in on the scam. The America parties could be a wake-up call, a chance to shake the establishment out of its complacency. But the realist in me, the guy who's read enough history to know how this movie ends, is nervous. Third parties don't just fail. They can backfire. Spectacularly. If Musk splits the conservative vote, he's not just poking the bear. He's handing the Democrats a gift. The 1992 election, when Ross Perot's Reform Party helped Bill Clinton beat George Herbert Walker Bush, is a cautionary tale. Musk's billions might make him a bigger player than Perot, but the math hasn't changed. A fractured right is a losing right. And yet, I can't help but admire the sheer audacity. Musk's not playing by the rules. He's rewriting them. He's betting that his money, his platform, and his vision can do what no one else has. Break the two-party monopoly. The X poll shows he's got a crowd cheering him on. But crowds don't vote in primaries, and they don't rewrite state election laws. The American Party might sting, but will it survive? History says no. Musk says, watch me. Here's the hard truth. America's political system is a meat grinder for third parties. Ballot access is a nightmare. Each state has its own Byzantine rules, and the major parties have a lock on the process. The Electoral College is another brick wall. Winner takes all means third-party candidates rarely win electoral votes. Even Ralph Nader, who shook things up in 2000, couldn't crack 3% of the vote. Musk's got the cash to fight these battles, but money can't buy loyalty. Voters stick with the devil they know. And the media? Well, the media. They'll have a field day painting Musk as a billionaire dilettante playing politics with his piggy bank. But let's not dismiss him too quickly. Musk's not just rich, he's a cultural force. X isn't just a platform, it's a megaphone that reaches millions. If he can turn that into a movement, if he can mobilize the disaffected and the disillusioned, he might just rewrite the playbook. The 2026 midterms will be the first test. If he can get America Party candidates on ballots and peel off enough votes to swing a few races, the establishment will feel the heat. But if he overplays his hand, if he alienates too many Republicans without winning over independents, he'll hand Congress to the Democrats on a silver platter. What's driving Musk? It's not just the deficit, though that's a big part of it. It's a deeper frustration with a system that rewards mediocrity and punishes principle. He sees a country where both parties are complicit in a slow-motion fiscal disaster, where waste and graft are the coin of the realm. He's not wrong. The national debt is a ticking time bomb, and Trump's bill just lit a shorter fuse. Musk's America Party is a cry for sanity, a demand for a government that lives within its means. But good intentions don't win elections. Organization, turnout, and strategy do. And right now, it's not clear if Musk has a real plan or just a Twitter thread and a dream. The risks are enormous. Musk's businesses are already in the crosshairs. Government contracts could dry up, and Tesla's shareholders are jittery. His feud with Trump is personal now, and Trump doesn't play nice with enemies. If Musk pushes too hard, he could lose more than just political clout. And yet, he's pressing forward, taking feedback on X, talking midterms, and doubling down on his vision. That's not the move of a man who's bluffing. That's the move of a man who believes he can change the world. He's done it before. Electric cars, reusable rockets, global internet satellites. Why not politics? So where does this leave us? Staring down a fork in the road. If Musk's America Party gains traction, it could force the Republicans to get serious about fiscal discipline. It could spark a real debate about what freedom means in 2025. But if it flops, and history says it might, it could hand the left a victory they don't deserve. The America Party is a bold, reckless, maybe even insane idea. But then again, so is landing a rocket on a drone ship in the middle of the ocean. Musk's done the impossible before. Can he do it again? Or will he crash and burn, taking the conservative movement with him? One thing's for sure. This is no sideshow. This is the main event. And America's future is on the line.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
News not in the news.
News.
Welcome back to the Richard Serrett Show, where I'm peeling back the curtain on the stories the globalist elites want buried. And tonight, I'm diving into four scandals that expose the rot festering in our governments, media, medical systems, and so-called justice institutions. A two-page memo from President Trump's Department of Justice and FBI, led by Director Kash Patel and Deputy Dan Bongino, claims Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide. No client list exists, and there's no evidence he blackmailed the powerful. Obtained by Axios, the memo details an exhaustive review, quote-unquote, of over 300 gigabytes of data, including images, videos of victims, some minors, and illegal child abuse material. The FBI conducted digital and physical searches, finding no incriminating client list or evidence of blackmail against third parties. The memo emphasizes protecting victim privacy, noting much of the material is under court-ordered seal to shield victims' identities, including names, physical descriptions, and employment history. The DOJ reaffirms Epstein's August 10th, 2019 death in a Manhattan jail cell as suicide, consistent with the 2019 New York City autopsy, the U.S. Attorney's Office findings, and a 2023 DOJ Inspector General report. Video footage from the special housing unit's common area, enhanced for clarity, allegedly shows no one entered Epstein's tier from 10:40 p.m. on August 9th until 6:30 a.m. the next day. Yet, contradictions linger. Cameras in Epstein's corridor reportedly malfunctioned, and his cellmate was transferred the night before. Attorney General Pam Bondi told Fox News in February 2025 that a client list was on her desk under review, directly contradicting the memo's claims. This memo reeks of a cover-up so blatant it's almost insulting. The FBI, with its track record of losing laptops and shredding evidence in the Russia hoax, expects us to believe they scoured 300 gigabytes and found nothing implicating Epstein's powerful clients. Epstein ran a trafficking empire catering to the global elite, politicians, CEOs, celebrities, yet we're told there's no client list, no blackmail, no leads. The memo's emphasis on victim privacy feels like a convenient shield to protect the guilty, not the innocent. Bondi's claim about having the list on her desk undermines the entire narrative. Either she was mistaken or the DOJ is lying now. The malfunctioning cameras and the suspiciously timed cellmate transfer only deepen the skepticism. This isn't transparency, it's a whitewash. The broader context is damning. Epstein operated with impunity for decades, enabled by a system that turned a blind eye to his crimes. The same system now wants us to accept a tidy conclusion that protects the powerful while leaving over 1,000 victims without justice. The memos claim that no third parties are implicated. This defies logic. Epstein's operation thrived on connections, leverage, blackmail, the sealed records, the sudden narrative shift, the insistence on suicide. It all points to a desperate effort to bury the truth before it exposes the rot at the top. The Epstein case is the ultimate indictment of the global elite, and this memo is their panic button. They want you to believe a lone wolf pervert, offed himself and left no trail. Case closed. Baloney. The cameras didn't just malfunction. The system didn't just fail. It was designed to protect monsters like Epstein and his clients. The DOJ's claim of no client list or blackmail evidence is a middle finger to every victim and every American demanding answers. Bondi's statement about the list proves they're not being straight with us. This is the swamp at its worst, shielding the powerful while gaslighting the public. We won't forget the 1,000-plus victims or the truth they're owed. The elite are terrified, and they should be. The truth is out there, and no amount of memos will bury it forever. Keep pushing, keep digging, because this fight isn't over. And a quick programming note, coming up tomorrow on The Richard Serrett Show, Nick Bryant will be here. He's one of the reporters who broke the Epstein nightmare, and since then, he's reported more about the underground sexual network of the powerful at universities, in politics, and in the entertainment industry. No one knows the story of Epstein's black book or Diddy's propensities than Nick Bryant. Documents obtained by the Citizens Alliance of Nova Scotia through Freedom of Information requests have blown the lid off a grotesque scandal. Nova Scotia's public health system is funding irreversible transgender surgeries for patients under the age of 19. including 5 procedures in 2023-2024 to create neovaginal canals, as revealed in the province's health insurance program annual report. Additional procedures, such as penectomies and orchiectomies, were performed in the same age bracket, but exact numbers are suppressed under Section 20 of Nova Scotia's Freedom of Information Act, which blocks disclosure when patient counts are below 5. Stacey Burgess, Executive Director of Clinical Care at Nova Scotia Health, dodged questions about whether these patients were minors, citing privacy laws, but admitted the province funds genital surgeries for those over 16 under certain conditions. This directly contradicts years of assurances from Health Canada and provincial authorities that bottom surgeries like vaginoplasties, irreversible procedures, reshaping penile tissue into artificial vaginal openings, are not performed on anyone under 18. The data provided to True North by the Citizens Alliance includes internal emails, policy memos, and statistical breakdowns showing a broader trend of transgender medical interventions for minors. Children as young as 15 are receiving puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. These drugs trigger irreversible changes, including infertility and altered sexual development, with a sharp increase in prescriptions for young girls in 2024. Nova Scotia's transgender healthcare budget for 2023-2024 was $1.7 million, covering surgeries, hospital costs, physician fees, out-of-province expenses like airfare and accommodations, and even transgender health equipment, like binders and prosthetic genital devices. Between 2021 and 2024, the province spent over $2 million on 187 mastectomies for all ages. Policy changes have obliterated medical safeguards. The requirement for patients to live as the opposite sex for 12 months before surgery, gone. Mandatory psychological assessments, scrapped. The standard of 2 independent referral letters for surgical intervention, reduced to 1. These shifts, based on the World Professional Association for Transgender Health Standards of Care version 8, have come under fire globally for promoting early medical transition with scant evidence. Internal emails show Burgess admitting in May 2024 that she only skim-read WPATH's guidelines, even after the WPATH files exposed by Maya Hughes revealed internal dissent and questionable reliability. Hughes, writing in the National Post, noted that jurisdictions like Sweden, Finland, the UK, and Alberta are pulling back from youth medical transition due to risks and lack of long-term data. Yet, Nova Scotia is expanding these services, ignoring mounting evidence of harm. This story lays bare a chilling truth. The medical establishment, backed by government dollars, is conducting an experiment on children, driven by ideology rather than science. The data shows a clear uptick in irreversible interventions, surgeries, hormones, blockers, targeting kids who lack the maturity to consent to life-altering decisions. WPATH's guidelines, which Nova Scotia clings to like a sacred text, have been discredited as activist-driven. Yet bureaucrats like Burgess admit to barely reading them. This isn't oversight, it's willful negligence. The removal of safeguards, living as the opposite sex, psychological evaluations, multiple referrals, shows a system prioritizing speed over caution, rushing kids onto operating tables and into sterility. Meanwhile, countries with more rigorous medical standards are sounding alarms, citing infertility, regret, and no evidence these procedures reduce suicide rates, a claim long peddled by transgender activists. The financial angle is equally damning. Nova Scotia's $1.7 million budget with no fixed cap signals a blank check for this agenda, while taxpayers foot the bill for everything from surgeries to travel expenses. The revolving door between activists and administrators, as Hughes notes, has embedded ideology into the health system, bypassing public scrutiny and medical debate. Mental health therapists who raised concerns are silenced, fearing professional repercussions, which points to a culture of intimidation. This isn't healthcare. It's a pipeline designed to churn out irreversible outcomes with children as collateral damage. This is state-sanctioned child abuse, plain and simple. We're watching a generation of kids being mutilated under the guise of compassion, pushed into decisions that rob them of their fertility, their bodies, and their own futures. The same activists who scream about bodily autonomy have no qualms about fast-tracking minors into surgeries they can't fully comprehend. It's a grotesque betrayal of trust. Parents, taxpayers, and most of all, those vulnerable kids who are being sacrificed on the altar of woke ideology. The fact that Nova Scotia is doubling down while other nations retreat is a scandal of historic proportions. Those responsible, bureaucrats, doctors, activists, should face accountability, not applause. This isn't progress, it's a moral catastrophe, and history will judge it as such. We need to stop this madness before more kids are scarred for life. Ex-CBC anchor Travis Donraj has publicly claimed he was forced to resign after calling out systemic issues at Canada's state broadcaster. In a letter to colleagues, Donraj described a workplace culture defined by retaliation, exclusion, and psychological harm, accusing the CBC of hypocrisy on its championed values of inclusion and diversity. He alleged that questioning tokenism, biased political coverage, and the erosion of editorial independence became a career-ending move. Donraj, a senior parliamentary reporter and former co-host of Marketplace and host of Canada Tonight, said his push for honest conversations about these issues led him to being shut out, sidelined, silenced, and ultimately erased. He argued that the CBC's public commitment to trust and inclusion is a branding exercise, not a lived reality, pointing to a small group of insiders on air and in management who wield outsized influence and prioritize spin over substance. Donraj's departure in February 2025 sparked speculation, with some linking his criticism of editorial imbalance. He urged colleagues to speak up, emphasizing that the CBC's erosion of trust stems from years of dysfunction at the highest levels. In a separate statement, he vowed to pull the curtain back and reveal more about the CBC's inner workings, dismissing attempts to paint him as a bitter or disgruntled former employee. His exit highlights broader concerns about the state broadcaster's credibility and its role as a taxpayer-funded institution. Donraj's story is a damning indictment of the CBC's transformation into an ideological fortress. Once a symbol of Canadian journalism, it's now a machine that crushes dissent to protect a narrow narrative. His allegations, retaliation, exclusion, and a culture that punishes tough questions point to a newsroom more concerned with ideology than truth. The CBC's obsession with tokenism, as Donraj describes, reveals a shallow commitment to diversity, where optics trump substance. His claim that a small clique of insiders controls the narrative suggests a power structure that stifles independent thought, turning a public broadcaster into a propaganda arm. The broader context is telling. The CBC, funded by taxpayers, is supposed to reflect Canada's values. Yet Donraj's experience shows it's become a walled garden where only approved scripts survive. His forced exit isn't an isolated incident. It's a symptom of a media landscape increasingly allergic to dissent. The fact that he faced professional erasure for raising valid concerns about tokenism, political bias, and editorial independence exposes a chilling reality. The CBC isn't about journalism anymore. It's about control. The CBC is a national disgrace. Donraj's courage in calling out its hypocrisy lays bare what we've long suspected. It's a taxpayer-funded propaganda mill that betrays the public it claims to serve. The elites running this show, those insiders Donraj calls out, aren't interested in truth. They're interested in power. They hide behind buzzwords like inclusion while silencing anyone who dares challenge their narrative. This isn't journalism. It's a mafia with microphones. Donraj's exit is a clarion call for reform. The CBC needs a wrecking ball, not a rebrand. Canadians deserve a broadcaster that respects their intelligence, not one that gaslights them into submission. Until that happens, it's just another cog in the globalist machine, and we should defund it yesterday. Dr. Christina Probst, a Texas pediatrician, was fired from Bluefish Pediatrics after posting a vile social media rant cheering the deaths of Texas flood victims, including children, because they were allegedly Trump supporters. In a now-viral post, Probst wrote, quote, "May all visitors, children, non-MAGA voters, and pets be safe and dry," adding that Kerr County MAGA voted to gut FEMA and deny climate change, concluding with a snide, "bless their hearts." The backlash was swift. Bluefish Pediatrics suspended her, then terminated her, stating her comments didn't reflect her values. Memorial Hermann Health System, associated with Bluefish, also distanced itself, emphasizing zero tolerance for such rhetoric. Probst's post sparked outrage online, with users noting she changed her Facebook username and profile image after the post went viral. Her profiles were removed from Bluefish Pediatrics and Memorial Hermann's websites. The Texas Medical Board's chief, Sharif Safran, vowed to investigate any complaints thoroughly, emphasizing a focus on saving lives, not politicizing tragedies. Social media erupted with calls for Probst to lose her medical license, with comments ranging from accusing her of violating her oath to do no harm to branding her a monster for gloating over MAGA children's deaths. The story gained traction after reports of 27 deaths at Camp Mystic, an all-girls Christian summer camp, in the same floods. Probst's rant isn't just a personal failing. It's a window into the unhinged hatred coursing through the veins of the progressive elite. As a pediatrician, she was entrusted with children's lives, yet she publicly wished death on those she assumed were politically opposed to her. This isn't a one-off. It's a symptom of a broader cultural sickness, where ideological purity trumps humanity. Her claim that flood victims got what they voted for reveals a worldview that dehumanizes dissenters, reducing them to caricatures deserving of suffering. The fact that she posted this publicly, thinking it wouldn't cost her, shows how emboldened these ideologues are. They believe their hatred is righteous. The response, however, is a silver lining. The public's outrage, from social media to her employer's swift action, shows that ordinary people aren't buying the left's sanctimonious posturing anymore. The Texas Medical Board's investigation and calls for her license to be revoked signal a demand for accountability. But the deeper issue is the culture that produces someone like Probst, a culture where political tribalism justifies cruelty, even towards children. This is the same mindset that fuels cancel culture and ideological conformity, and it's rotting our institutions from the inside. Christina Probst is a disgrace to medicine and a walking indictment of the left's moral bankruptcy. Cheering the deaths of children because of their parents' politics? That's not just unprofessional, it's evil. This is what happens when ideology festers unchecked. People like Probst lose all sense of decency, cloaking their hatred in smug virtue. The left loves to lecture us about compassion, but when the mask slips, you see this. A pediatrician gloating over dead kids. Her firing was the bare minimum. She should lose her license and face the full weight of public scorn. The fact that she thought she could get away with this shows how arrogant these elites have become. But the backlash proves the silent majority is awake and done tolerating this venom. Good riddance, Probst. Your career's collapse is a warning to every ideologue who thinks hatred is a personality trait. I'm Richard Serra. Thanks for listening. I'll speak with you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.